Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, well listen, if it wasn't enough to have one legend for you today, we have another one now. So we don't normally do house calls, right? But when acting legend and Academy Award winner Brenda Fricker, as she hates to be known, summons you to her house to hear you reflect on her life, you go. And Brenda was great fun. And so straight and open. But on that note, just to warn you, this is quite a grown-up conversation too, and it does touch at times on difficult themes. So anyway, here's what happened at Brenda's house. Brenda Fricker, hello.
Hello, how are you?
And thanks for letting us come and talk to you in your home here in the Liberties in Dublin. Will I describe the scene or will you?
Oh, you describe.
No, you describe the scene.
No, I wouldn't be able to. You describe.
Yeah, but what if I describe it in a way then that you're not happy?
But
with,
it'll be objective for me.
Okay,
then,
okay, see? All right. So you are sitting, semi-reclining on a bed. Juno, the dog, is next to you, but you promise he will be quiet. And we are surrounded by lovely art and photographs and eaves and the roof above us. And I presume surrounded by memories, aren't
yeah.
we? Yeah. Did you stay here all the years, yeah?
Well, I have three houses, the three cottages
okay.
that are together. So, the,
okay.
yeah, the
See,
kitchen was the first cottage.
Okay.
So I lived in that. There were 11 children brought up in that space. And I lived there for years. And then the next one came up for sale. So I bought that one and then this one came up for sale. So I'm half the street now.
Yeah, you're colonising gradually.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. I'm a threat to the neighbours.
How are you, Brenda?
I'm all right. I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Good days and bad days.
Yeah. Is today a good day or a bad day?
No, it's a bad day.
Okay. Anything to do with me or is it just a bad day?
It's you, actually.
Okay.
No, it's just a bad
okay,
day.
Why did I ask? Brenda, you've written... It's a memoir. It's almost a poem of a memoir. It's called She Died Young, A Life in Fragments. And it is, as it suggests, scenes... from a life. So when you went to write, were these the things that you remembered most potently? Was that it?
I didn't remember anything when I started to write that because I didn't know what I was doing. I was writing it in a panic. I was writing it because I was being told I owed £20,000 to somebody, which I didn't owe them, I don't think. And I didn't have any money, didn't have £20,000. And I phoned the wonderful David Putnam and told him my story. And he said, write a book. And I said, don't be serious, and write a book. David, I want to write a book. I thought, okay, I'll try. So that's how it started.
You wrote it in bed, did you?
Most of it, or at the kitchen table, a lot of it, yeah.
Did you write it on your phone?
Yes. I did, yeah, under the duvet here at night, yeah. And, you know, I can't hold the phone when most people do it, their two thumbs. You see them doing
yeah.
that? I have to do one finger banging on the phone under the duvet at night. It was okay. a long haul.
Yeah, I'd say it gives you an economy, though. You're not going wasting the
exactly.
finger on words
apart
you don't need.
Predictive
yeah.
writing, but what's that predictive spelling thing?
Yeah.
I couldn't turn it off. It'd drive you
okay.
mad, yeah.
So is some of the book then predictive text or did you get down everything you intended?
I couldn't turn it off, so I didn't know where to turn it off. It drove me mad.
So yeah. semi-written by AI.
Yeah, exactly. All the words are from AI, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel there are a lot of myths about you, right? And one of them now, and this will feed into it, that we are here with you now and we're in the house and you're on / in the bed. People talk of you as kind of reclusive or semi-reclusive or any of that. Are you?
Am I? Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm good with my own company. And I am reclusive, yeah.
For how long?
Long spells, yeah.
And will you emerge back out at times? Will you emerge back out at some stage?
I find it difficult, Brendan, to leave the house sometimes. And that's a personal thing to say to you, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a throwback to depression, when you're locked in and you can't get out. I just find it difficult to cross the door some days.
Would you like to go out?
Yeah, but I do get out some days as well. I have the car, so I can do a dash I dash out the door and get into the car and I'm free then, yeah.
Okay. But you always want to come back here.
But I've always been like that all my life.
Yeah.
Afraid to cross over thresholds. I think just that thing of moving from one space to another. I think something like that.
There's a lot of pain in the book and there's a lot of joy as well. And you hook us in right at the start. The first three words are, sometimes I falter. And then you say a few other things. And then you say at the end of it, do you falter to the reader? And of course we all do, right? But what it did then is it sets it up that as we read it, we're maybe auditing our own pain and joy as we are going through yours. So I was thinking about pain and joy. So looking back at 80 now, did the joy outweigh the pain for you? Did the pain outweigh the joy?
Well, the pain was like medical, if you like, if you can call depression medical.
Yeah.
When something happens to you that you have no control over. So you're mentally locked into a place where you're not happy. You know, that is the sad bit. But I'm actually a lovely person when I'm not sad, as anybody who knows me would tell you. But yeah, I'm fine. Off to the parties and out to the beach or whatever, I'm grand. And then this devil comes in and takes your life over, you know. But I'm all right. I'm fairly balanced.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had a rough start. So Boina, your mother, was a teacher and she was quite violent to you, was she?
Very. I wonder why. She was a nice person, a nice woman.
Yeah.
A popular teacher. And it was only me. I was the only person she slashed around or kicked around, but I never understood it. There's no logic to it. There's no warning. I didn't do something wrong and she beat me, you know, it just came from nowhere. So I think when she died, we asked the doctor about the tumour. Lise Grania asked and said how long
it
had
been
there.
Yeah. Yeah, and your mother died of a tumour.
That's right, tumour in the brain. And she asked the doctor, would that have been maybe the cause for violence? And he said, possibly. So we had a kind of an excuse there.
Yeah, that must be helpful, is it?
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, yeah, very.
And your father Des then, another kind of, you know, well-got, you know, respectable fellow around, journalist with the Irish Times, a broadcaster. Did he know this was going on?
Who knows?
Did he make his presence felt,
Brendan,
at all?
He was sitting reading his book when bits of it were going on. It's a small house. He must have heard the shouts, you know. But he went into his book and he just shut himself off. You weren't allowed to go near him when he was reading a book. But I mean, there were some things he must have heard. As I said, it was a small house. This is a small house. If I scream here, you're going to hear me next door. So why didn't he get involved in it?
How did they rub along as a couple? Were they in love?
I'd say they probably were. But I don't know what went wrong. They never had a row. I never saw them fighting or like a lot of women then, Brendan. She was a bit subservient to their man, you know. You were regarded as a good husband if you came home and handed over your wage packet, and that was how it went.
Yeah.
That was really how it went.
Like, did you ever see them kind of touch each other or dance in
no.
the kitchen or none of that?
No.
No,
no, never, never.
Now, you spent your summers then down in Kerry, Gníomhgúile, was it?
Gníomhgúile.
Yeah. With your aunt Noni. And it sounds like if the picture you've painted of home what sounds a bit loveless, it sounds like the opposite down there.
Completely the opposite. Full of love. The air was lovely, you know. See, that's her there, the picture over there. She was an amazing woman. Really amazing.
Her, yeah.
Full of love. And she had nothing. You know, her husband had died like an hour after the last child was born. 7 kids on a small farm. Nobody to help her. Still full of love.
Still and still
warm.
Enough for you as
still,
well.
You know, yeah.
Seven.
The way women, you brought people into their family. They were all stray kind of children that would end up in a family.
Yeah.
You know, that went on. But she was my auntie, so I suppose she'd... I loved every minute of down there.
It kind of, it sounds as if she was maybe a better mother to you than your mother.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would have done if I didn't have her love in my life. I don't know where I would have ended. Because that kind of violence would have led me maybe to violence. I don't know.
Okay.
You do what you see growing up, don't you?
Yeah.
But the opposite
and there was no love at home, was there?
I don't remember any.
Yeah. You describe the times in Kerry very sensuously, deliberately so,
oh, yeah.
I think. Yeah. Are you a very sensual person by nature?
Well, I think little girls are very sensual.
Yeah.
And I don't think adults like to admit that. But, yeah, you're very aware of your body and your skin. And I mean, when you're down in Kerry, and it's something simple like the wind is so important, just not for the farmers, but to feel. And to get from a horse with no saddles or you're just hanging on to the mane, that's exciting for any kid, yeah. You know. Instead of walking down the road and getting on a bus, like it's completely boring. And getting on a donkey and all that stuff, like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Putting your hand into a cow's mouth and, oh, the softness of it.
And I suppose maybe allied to that, like a lot of creative people, did you always feel things quite deeply, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are very morbid bits in it. I agree with you. But then we're all morbid in this country, for God's sake, aren't we? But that's why I tried to put happy bits in.
Yeah.
And then I quite enjoyed writing the happy bits, which I didn't think I'd do.
Were the happy bits when you felt loved and are the sad bits when you didn't feel loved? Is it as simple as that in a way?
I think it is probably as simple as that because it was that extreme. Like if you're parching for water in one place and you have floods almost in the other. It was that extreme, yeah, it was that extreme.
And was that all your life then, that when you felt loved,
yeah,
you were happy?
Yeah.
And when you didn't feel loved, you weren't?
Yeah. I can remember driving down in the car, just getting into the car in Dublin and knowing you were going to Gnívegrilla.
Yeah.
The excitement to just start then. And you couldn't wait to get out of the car, like I say in the book, and just put your little feet on the Kerry ground. Yeah. And you were there and you belonged there and you were in the right place, you know.
So back to the pain then. When did you start harming yourself?
I can't remember. 10? I think it was 10. And I cut myself first.
And how long did that go on for?
The rest of my life.
Do you know why?
No, I don't think any of you. Good God, Brendan, I have been through 100 psychiatrists and none of them has explained to me why you do that. I mean, so there are theories, self-hatred and lack of love and things like that. I don't think they work for me as explanations.
I suppose Boina made you feel you were no good, though, did she? Even if
she did,
that wasn't directly related, but she must have.
It's a very violent thing for a kid to do, though. But I do genuinely believe that sitting in the church at Mass on a Sunday, God, there was blood everywhere.
Yeah.
Like these pictures of swords in their bodies and blood pouring out and hearts. And I think I connected it with religion in a way, do you know?
Yeah.
And I mean that, seriously. Yeah. It was so impressive. You're small and you're looking at those big pictures with the Lord, with the thing on his hands and nails on his feet. And it's very, very violent.
Yeah.
And blood, I think I became fascinated with blood.
So when did you stop hurting yourself, though? You stopped at some stage, did you?
I'd probably do it tomorrow if it wasn't on half a dozen antidepressants.
Okay. So when you were 14, you had a very bad accident. Knocked you off your bike. The injuries sound pretty horrific, were they?
Yeah, they were terrible. Yeah. Face first through a windscreen. That does you a lot of damage, yeah.
Funny, we've talked about a lot of intense things there, but that's the first time now you've been a bit rattled or kind of wincing at the memory, is it?
That's not a nice one.
Yeah.
It certainly changed a lot of things for me. But then a lot of good things came out of it as well.
So tell me first about the things that changed. You were in the Meath Hospital for 2 years, were you?
2 years, yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous. You wouldn't be there that length now. There's no way of being in hospital for 2 years. But yeah, I was in hospital for 2 years. But you learn a lot. I mean, I learned a lot about living on your own, about not being in school, about not having the normal life and dealing with what's around you. You know, there's quite positive things, that you have to find positive things or you'd lose your reason. And anybody who's in hospital will tell you that. You just survive it, Brendan.
Yeah.
Whatever way you can, you know. The whole teenage thing went on, went on to 14, 16, then 18. So 14 to 18 is important years.
Yeah.
And I missed out on all those completely. That's why I'm so awkward now, I'm as a grown up. I missed out a lot of stuff in chunks.
Because after the accident, then the TB came quickly.
Came very quickly, yeah.
And what was the year in the sanatorium like?
That was tough because I was in a room of my own. And in those days, they believed if you had to lie completely still, like your hands down like that, because they believed then that if you didn't move, the TB bug would not move either. And then slowly you were allowed to put your hands out and have a cup of tea and that. So it was, 12 months for that. I think not having visitors was tough there. You were very isolated.
So did you have no visitors? Or how?
Sunday for 1 hour and Friday for 1 hour.
And who would come into you?
Well, Friday was family and then Sunday was family and then Friday was husbands or wives. So I didn't have a husband or wife and Des was working on a Sunday afternoon, so he came on the Friday nights, which was lovely.
Yeah.
Because I had him all to myself.
Yeah.
For an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't escape. He had to talk to me.
Is that the first time you got proper attention from your daddy, yeah?
And he started writing beautiful letters to me. And he was a lovely writer. Yeah, and I write back to him. Then he gave me the little typewriter.
And did Boina come?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it must have killed her.
So, can we move on to another hospital then?
Oh, please do.
One of the chapters. I promise this is the last hospital.
Please
now.
Please let it be.
One of the chapters in the book is called Mad, and it's extraordinary. It's a stream of consciousness account of being in a psychiatric hospital. And I think it feeds into my worst fears anyway, and I'd say a lot of people, because you're totally lost, like lost to the world, like your grip on reality is gone. Did it get that bad at times?
Over-medicated. Very, very heavy antidepressants, which wouldn't let near you now. And you were treated very badly. You were thrown into things like cells. If you shouted or something, you threw a fit or something, you'd be thrown into this place to be on your own. And it was all wrong, the things they did to you. The nurses had no interest in mental health. If you had a cut, they'd help you, you know, but it was very, very lonely. Very lonely. And I was rebelling, which wasn't the right thing to do because you got on the nerves of some of the nurses and they didn't like it and they'd give you a whack across the face as quick as look at you like. Imagine that happening now.
Yeah. You made numerous suicide attempts.
What did Anthony Clare tell me?
31.
31. How did you get the time to do that 31 times?
Did you want to die?
I do now, this minute.
Do you?
I can't remember not wanting to die.
All the time?
Pretty well, yeah.
But you seem as if you're engaged with this, that there is life here and there is this room you're in looks as if it's the room of someone who cares about the world, who hasn't given up.
I'm trying to say it cleanly.
Yeah,
and it's a very difficult thing for people to understand.
Yeah.
That if I say I would prefer, if I could die quietly tonight, I would be very happy. But I won't. With my luck, I will live to be 110. So there's no chance of me dying tonight.
And you will keep going.
I will keep going.
So Anthony Clare, he was the only one who really helped you, did he? How did he help?
I wasn't the only one. He was brilliant, way ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And people were able to they're still not able to talk about mental health. They still whisper the word psychiatrist. Or the word suicide that you just said very cleanly. That's whispered.
Yeah.
I don't think we're clean at all, people. Why should we be clean? It's dreadful. I mean, mental health is dreadful.
What was Anthony Clare able to do for you that others couldn't?
I think he sort of heard you. He understood whatever you were babbling out from your pain. He was, I don't know, how do you describe talent? He was just good at his job.
I think you say, you write in the book, he helped you to come to terms with the depression, almost giving up the fight.
It's hard to answer one question like that. It's very complex.
Is there something to be said, though, for not wrestling with it in some way? Coming to terms with
it? I can't imagine not wrestling with it.
Really? Yeah.
No, I wish I could. No. It's too strong.
Do you try not to wrestle with it?
I try not to wrestle with anything, Brendan.
But as you say, you're able to function in life, and more than function. Like you lived and you thrived, as we all know. So
the only
Irish woman to win an Oscar for acting and all that kind of thing. Acting and being around actors and theatre people and everything, it gave you great joy, didn't it?
I love being around actors because they're so much freer than the average person.
Yeah.
Because we go out and do this nonsense of getting up on the stage and pretending we're somebody else. Which is what kids do, and your imagination is let loose as well. So that if you're doing that, then you have to be loose. And to carry on, we got on with and got away with, because you were actors, you're a bit funny, no, they're a bit odd, let them get on with it. You know? They weren't over there in the corner. It was fine. It was just very, that time in Dublin, I suppose it's very hard to describe. It's also tight and dangerous now. It was very free-flowing then. It was easy-going, you know.
Yeah.
And actors are good company.
Yeah. You mentioned as well about that there was usually drink, even like the BBC was kind of centred around the BBC bar, and that it was a good thing, like it freed everyone up to be a bit more creative.
There was drink everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. We were drunk all the time. When I say in the book I was drunk, I wasn't falling around incapable, like.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I remember there was a drink that came out called Carlsberg Special, which was a lethal drink.
Yeah.
And I remember when it came out and somebody said to me, you get drunk really quickly on this, you don't have to drink pints. So I had to go with that. Oh, my goodness, we were all on that for a while. Pissed as a fart or whatever the phrase is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Carlsberg Special Brew, was it?
Carlsberg Special Brew.
It was a favourite of people on the street and that used to get.
I have a lot in common with people on the street.
Have you?
I do indeed.
You don't talk much about your career in the book. Being on Coronation Street was a big deal for you early on, was it?
It was, because you met all these people that were heroes, you know? Yeah. In fact, they offered me only the other day, they wanted to go over for 18 months to go in as a new character. And I had to say no. I'd have to go and live there and leave the dog and live in Manchester, I'd know nobody, and so I had to say no. I'd love to have said yes. And they would have paid me a fortune. A fortune.
You see, back to the myths about you, I suppose there is another kind of thing that people say about you, as if there was this other career that you could have had if you were more straightforward individual and more maybe able to play the game and, you know, do all that.
I never played the game, I don't think. I stayed a step outside the game.
Yeah.
But I was there. I knew the rules.
Okay.
And I knew how to play it.
Okay.
But I stayed detached from that.
Okay.
I never got caught up in it.
Yeah.
No, I didn't like it. Fame is awful.
What was the worst thing about it?
Everything. It's a horrible thing.
So, did winning the Oscar change things?
I tried to write that book without the word Oscar in
prize.
It.
Did winning the prize change things?
No, I'm not telling you to say, not to say it here. It was just a piece of discipline not to mention it.
Yes.
And it got in, and the publisher tells me I let it go by. I'm saying I didn't let it go by.
The whole word got in there somewhere.
The whole word is in there, and I nearly fainted when I read it. But I had to write a book about my life before winning anything.
Yeah.
Because people identify me so much with that bloody thing, you know, that I wanted to do something that wasn't connected with it. What was your question? Sorry.
My question was, what did it change for you, or good or bad or indifferent?
Well, the checks were bigger.
Yeah.
There were suddenly lots of figures on the checks. That was good. You were suddenly travelling first class everywhere. You got in places, you know. You got too much attention, I think. People made so much of it. It's not that big a thing, but it's so public. And it's televised all over the world, and people see it and they know it. It's very hard to escape. Like somebody said the other day, you know what the first word of your, what do they call the thing they write when you die?
Obituary.
Your obituary.
Yeah.
Academy Award winner would be the first three words.
Mm.
Can't escape them.
But did you enjoy it?
Bits of it.
Yeah. You didn't have a lot of patience for poor Daniel Day-Lewis's method acting.
Oh, dear. Dear me. Let's not get into that, Brendan, because he'll phone me up and he'll be upset. So now, he's a beautiful man.
He'll be terribly nice.
And a wonderful actor. Yes. And it's true. He is a really lovely man, and an honourable, good man, and a very good actor. I just don't like that style. I can't help it. There's loads of method actors around. And they don't convince me, you know. Some people love it. They love it in America.
Yeah. You talk to a lot of actors and they talk about the generosity of the other actors and cooperative nature of the endeavour that you need the other people. So the method gets in the way of that, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
They're in it for themselves.
I found the method cuts me off.
Yeah.
And I don't care what journey an actor has to make to get a good performance on the screen, if it doesn't interfere with me. If it interferes with my journey to the screen, then I have to close down. Mm. So you have two people closing down then, which is not good. Where if there isn't a method actor around, or an actor who's like that, I think it disrupts things. Now, I could be completely wrong. I'm just talking for myself.
Yeah. You, as people would be getting, you write about a lot of challenging things in the book. You were raped twice, Brenda, and you write of the first one, "This incident, more than any other, changed me. I was broken now, and I would remain so."
Yeah. Well, it's impossible to describe what a rape does to you, except that you'd do feel broken, you know, and then a second time, you're certainly broken. It's the most, I can't find words to describe it. I mean, everybody tries to describe it, you can't. And I don't think a man can understand it.
Yeah.
Because it's dreadful, dreadful, dreadful thing to do.
And it stays with you forever.
Forever. Still forever. Forever. Like even now, some days something would remind me of it and I feel the pain again. It just ruins your life. And I mean, you recover, of course, and you go on. I'm not saying it ruins your life forever, but it ruins a part of your life forever. Sure, I couldn't make love for years, as I told you when I got married. Poor Barry had to put up with a lot of patience with me.
Yeah, but I think this is Barry Davis. He was a British film and TV and theatre director as well.
All of them, yeah.
He did help you heal.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Yeah.
For a whole year after we got married, he was so gentle and understanding and wooed me back to confidence, I suppose, because I was fascinated by the man and deeply in love and trusted him and all that. So, yeah, he was wonderful. Yeah.
And you were together 16 years?
I don't know, was it? Yeah. Were we? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, he cured me of that.
Yeah.
So I was able to run around and have sex with everybody after that. You know, so serious.
Like, this is tricky territory for me now, like, as to how...
Don't be nervous now, Brendan. Right.
Was Barry, was that the big love of your life?
Ah, yeah, that was, definitely, yeah. He was fascinating. I don't write about him very much. I don't talk about him very much.
Tell me a bit about him.
It's hard to tell. It's very hard to describe somebody as wonderful as that, because you sound kind of silly. You'd be using words that are too sentimental. And he was just wonderful.
It's all right.
Yeah, he was wonderful. Yeah. Then the drink got him. The drink got him. The tragedy.
Yeah.
Got my sister as well. Terrible sad, isn't it, when that happens?
Yeah. And had the drink got him towards the end of the marriage? Because it was another number of years before he died, and I know he stayed.
Oh, no, I left because of the drink.
He left because of the drink.
I still loved him.
And were you still drinking at that point? Or when one person is like that, does the other person tend to become the sensible one?
Oh, my drinking was nothing compared to his, like. Yeah. I mean, when I talk, you're making me feel now that I was an alcoholic. I wasn't drunk all the time. Yeah, I mean, everybody, Brendan, drank. It was the drinking era. Every single person I know then were drinking at lunchtime. You were having your pint, you were drinking in the evening. Everybody was slightly pissed all the time.
Yeah.
He was just drunk all the time. Big difference.
You write very powerfully about a miscarriage you had. You would like to have had children, would you?
Oh, I would like to have had children, I would. And I don't think I've put it in the book, or maybe you can tell me. On the last miscarriage, the fifth one, the doctor was dealing with the miscarriage, right? And he took out my womb as well, which I'm told still happens. And what do you do? What can you do then?
Is that a sadness?
Oh, it's beyond sadness. Is it? Oh, it's dreadful. It's dreadful. I was talking to somebody the other day, for some reason this came up, and this person was going out the door, and he turned back and smiled at me, and he said, "If you had had children, they would have been really charming." And it broke my heart. I've never had anything as kind as that said to me. It was so lovely. You know, it made me think, oh, maybe there would have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think about it, but what's the point? I have so many things to think about that depress me, Brendan. Come on, tell me something that's happy.
I'll tell you something happy, though. You're an incredible person. Like, you are, when you said charming there, you were the most charming, magnetic, like intelligent, kind of grounded, authentic person and everything. I don't understand why you want to die all the time. You seem like somebody who lives this life very well.
Well, I suppose I do live that part of it well. I mean, I've learned how to behave socially. But when you're all gone...
What'll happen?
Well, I won't be laughing, let's put it that way.
So why don't you have more people come in then and laugh with them?
Because I'm reclusive. We're back to that.
Okay, and chicken and egg. Why are you reclusive? Why wouldn't you have them in?
Who knows?
Okay.
I'm not being evasive.
But it sounds like it's harder for them not to be here than if there were people.
There isn't, and you're trying to make me...
I'm no, I'm sorry.
You know what I mean?
I'm trying to argue for you to not be what you are. I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. Okay.
You'd make a good shrink.
Back off. Sorry. Sorry. You have a beautiful new film opening this weekend. It's called The Swallow.
Mm.
And I was saying to you, like, I don't get slow, arty films a lot of the time, but this is just so, so beautiful. And I was a wreck on the floor after it as well. And I suppose it's about time and memory and regrets and aging. And you know, the funny thing is, it's all in voiceover, right? And then at one point you're picking at some gorse or something and you go, huh!
Yeah.
And that's the first noise we hear out of you. I didn't realise up to then that you hadn't said a word.
I know.
But it is beautiful.
It is beautiful. And I think Tyke O'Sullivan, who wrote it and directed it, is a real talent for Ireland now. He's just so good. He really is. But it was, we did it as we went along. You know, he'd never worked with an actor. I'd never worked with a documentary maker, which is his, whatever he does. So we kind of bumbled along. And he'd say to me, what do you think you'd do there? Normally director the thing, stand there, you know. So I was delighted with myself. And I got great freedom with him. And we just ended up kind of somewhere in the middle, understanding each other.
Yeah.
And just flowed along. Yeah, he was great to work with.
Do you still love acting?
Yes. Yes, if it's a good script. Depends on the writing.
And is it a strain on you? Was it a strain on you to do that film? Is it hard
for you? Oh, no.
No, no.
No, it's happiness for me. Okay. Yeah. I love it. I love doing it.
And how would you categorise where you're at with your depression now?
I'm medicated.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm high as a kite. I'm only joking, I'm not.
Yeah.
But I'm grand, yeah.
And does it work? It does.
Oh, it does, yeah. Oh, it does, yes. I'm not sure what else it does to you, but maybe it dulls you a little bit as well. It has to, I suppose.
Yeah, there's no dullness going on today.
It's your company.
I'd hate to see you with the edge. Do you still watch the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills every night?
Every night. I save up some of that until there's about 10 episodes.
Yeah.
And then I binge on it.
And what else do you watch?
Documentaries mainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't that much good acting around, to be honest with you. You know, it sounds awful to say that, but I, you know, go on Netflix and look at some of the series they have on there, and I just don't think there's much talent in acting. That's an awful thing to say, isn't it?
No, I think you're allowed to say it.
I know, but
because as the only Irish woman ever to win an Oscar, I feel you're entitled to an opinion.
No, not now. Don't be unfair. That's not true. I hate that phrase, you're the first woman. I mean, it is lovely to have that in the history books, but...
Yeah.
It's a burden.
Is it, yeah?
I think it is, yeah. It's become one. And that sounds facetious. I don't mean it that way at all.
Yeah.
It's people have expectations about it. And I don't give a shit about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Is it around? Can I have a look at it afterwards? I've never seen one.
Well, if you go to the bathroom, you see it holding the door open.
Still there, yeah. You mentioned Grani earlier. She died in 2008.
I could never remember dates when people die. Yeah. I can't tell you one of them.
She died young anyway.
She died young, yeah.
She was damaged by the family as well, was she?
The drink got her as well.
Really, yeah.
That beautiful brain went downhill, yeah. Shame.
By the way, and it's a wonderful book, it really is. Did you know you could write?
No. No, I hadn't a clue. I thought it was dreadful. I was bumbling along, as I say, on the phone, not paying that much attention to it. Just, I knew I had to pay this woman £20,000, so I had to make money, so I was just writing it, you know?
Yeah. Did you get a handy few quid for it, yeah?
Well, I have the £20,000 now, but I don't know if I'm going to give it to her.
Okay. You know your problem now, they'll want another book.
Oh, I don't think there's another book.
Is that it? One and
done? Oh, I think it's one and that's it, yeah.
And how's life? What do you do with yourself?
Well, because I'm not in the best of health, I'm kind of stranded at the moment. The book took an awful lot out of me. It kind of killed me in a way. You know, I couldn't walk when I finished it. I couldn't get out of the bed. And it's not out of my head yet.
Yeah.
It's not out of my body yet, and I don't think it will be for a couple of months. And then I think I'll be grand again.
And you'll re-emerge.
I think so, yeah.
So how long,
have to let it settle.
How long did the book take away from you?
4 years.
Really?
Yeah. Every day.
And there was nothing else?
And there were 8 hospital admissions in that time. And I wrote every day, even if it was just a line. Because I was hanging on, Brendan. I thought, if I stop, I'll never do it. And I signed the contract by that time. And I just thought, write one line. And I did. And I think that gave me courage that spurred me on a bit, and I thought I could get through that. And as I said, there were 8 hospital admissions, and kept writing. So I'm proud of that. I'm allowed to say that.
Okay. Thank you very much for being so generous with your time, your
it's
house,
a bit sad.
And with everything.
A bit sad, Brendan, wasn't it?
No, I don't think so. And I think sometimes the sad things can be lovely as well, can't they?
I don't know.
You lived it. I know it's your sadness.
But yeah.
No, I think sometimes, like, to have these conversations can be a good thing.
What I worry about is, I love sharing any emotion with anybody, really. From anger to love, it's all interesting. But you wouldn't want to be writing a book that would bring somebody down.
Oh, I don't think it does.
Oh, well, that's what I wanted to hear.
Oh, God, no. Oh, you meant the book a bit sad. I thought it was all this conversation.
Well, that as well, like,
yeah.
You know.
No, no.
Good, that's no, the great
book
to hear.
The book is very life-affirming.
Oh, lovely, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's made me seriously consider my life choices as well. We'll discuss that another time. No, it is terrific. And yeah, and we should say to people that it is not just a thing of sadness.
Well, thanks very much. Because it isn't. Thing, but there's bits of joy in there as well. There's even humour.
Yeah. Yeah, I was half afraid of you now coming, but sure, you're only...
Well, I can be
like
very
the rest of us, like.
I've terrified some journalists in my time.
Yeah. Mellowed, Brenda.
I know, not really, if you push me now. Don't.
Okay, all right. I'll quit while I'm ahead. The book is called She Died Young, A Life in Fragments, and it's a stunning book, and it's published by Head of Zeus. And that film, The Swallow, and your film, The Swallow, because it is yours, it's all you, opened last night. You and Juno the dog was lying next to you there. That opened last night in selected cinemas. Brenda Fricker, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brendan.
Email brendan@rte.ie.